So imagine you're looking at the organizational chart of, a multi-million dollar investment firm.
Right.
And you realize that the entire bottom half of this chart is just completely missing.
Like completely gone.
Yeah, exactly. No junior analysts, no grunts doing all that heavy lifting in a sea of cubicles, just a few senior partners at the very top, and then just a massive artificial intelligence stack doing literally everything else.
I mean, it really defies every assumption we have about how a modern financial institution is, supposed to be built.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome to the Deep Dive, everyone. Today, we're taking you inside this truly fascinating dispatch.
Yeah, it's from Audit Frontier Partners.
Right. It's titled The Fund After Headcount, and it sits right at the center of their AI subsumption series. And our mission today, basically, is to unpack this. We want to use this research as a crystal ball to figure out what the true, AI native institution actually looks like.
Exactly. Because we want to know which jobs disappear, which ones survive, and, well, how the organizations of the future are actually going to be built from the ground up.
And to do that, the researchers did something really interesting. They reconstructed the organizational architecture of 38 different African investment firms.
Yeah.
Just to see what happens when AI actually takes over the workflow.
And, if you look at the visual backdrop we've got going right now, this sprawling, illuminated cityscape, I want you to imagine that each of those lights represents one of these 38 mapped firms just scattered all across the continent.
Right.
Because they give us this perfect preview of the global future of knowledge work.
Okay, let's unpack this because, before we even get to what AI will do to these firms, the way this report was actually created is a whole story in itself, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The methodology basically proves the entire thesis of the study right out of the gate.
Yeah, because it's kind of a complete paradox. Like, normally, if you're doing a structural analysis of 38 private equity firms, you'd need, an army of consultants?
Oh, yeah. You'd have consultants sitting in boardrooms for 6 months. You'd be relying on super expensive industry surveys or, needing exclusive insider access.
Right. The classic massive research project.
Yeah.
But this dispatch wasn't built like that at all.
No, not at all. It wasn't built through consulting. It was built by just pointing AI systems at what the authors call the visibility exhaust of these firms.
Wait, I want to pause on that term, visibility exhaust.
Okay.
Because I love that phrase. That basically means the public trail that these firms just inevitably leave behind online, right?
Precisely, yeah. We're talking about about pages on their websites, their team profiles on LinkedIn, press releases about, new deals they've closed.
Even like historical promotion announcements, right?
Exactly. The
yeah.
AI just ingested all of this public material like at absolute machine speed.
Mm.
And it treated all that fragmented data as organizational telemetry. So work that would traditionally demand, a massive research budget and a whole team of junior analysts that was all executed by just a small operator and an AI stack.
In a matter of days, probably.
Literally days. Mm. So like we said, the report proved its own point just by coming into existence.
That is wild. So the AI essentially became the analyst class, just to write a report proving that the human analyst class is obsolete.
I know. It's an incredible paradox.
And it just completely shatters the mental model that, most people have of a financial firm. If you look at Wall Street or London, the traditional model is this massive conventional standing army.
Right. A huge pyramid.
Yeah. I always picture it like a massive iceberg, actually. You have this tiny visible tip at the top.
Yeah.
Those are the generals, the few senior partners. And then underwater, supporting the whole thing, is this huge hidden mass of foot soldiers.
The junior analysts.
Right. Thousands of them. Just building the financial models, writing the memos, and, grinding through Excel spreadsheets at 2 a.m.
What's fascinating here is why the African private capital market looks completely different from that standing army iceberg.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Because out of the 38 firms analyzed in this dispatch, only 1 in 4 had any dedicated analysts at all.
Wait, really? Only a quarter of them?
Just a quarter. And even then, it was never more than 2 analysts per firm.
That's crazy.
Right. They completely skipped the massive standing army phase of development. But, it wasn't because these fund managers had some sort of magical foresight about artificial intelligence a decade ago.
Right. They weren't predicting the future.
Exactly. It was purely a consequence of severe economic constraint.
Because they simply didn't have those massive management fee pools that the Wall Street giants command, right?
Yep.
They literally couldn't afford to hire the army, even if they wanted to.
Exactly. In the legacy sort of industrial model of finance, scale preceded capability.
Meaning you had to be big before you could be good.
Yes. You had to be a massive firm to be a sophisticated firm, because you needed those enormous fees to pay the human army that was required to process all that market information.
Right, you couldn't run the complex math or, analyze the market trends without just throwing human bodies at the problem.
Right. But because the African funds lacked those deep pockets, they were forced to evolve differently. They evolved more like a highly specialized, lean special forces
A
unit.
task force instead of an army.
Exactly. They had to figure out how to operate at a really high level without the sheer mass of personnel.
And so, by pure accident, really, this structural scarcity means they are now perfectly aligned for the AI native future.
It's incredible timing.
Yeah, because when AI enters a typical Wall Street firm today, that firm has to figure out how to fire a massive analyst class or how to completely rewrite their entire training pipeline.
Which is a huge structural headache.
Totally. But the African funds don't have any of that legacy baggage. The scarcity they faced compressed their architecture long before the technology did.
That's spot on.
But, okay, if these firms aren't built on a foundation of junior analysts, how do they actually function? Like, what does their shape actually look like?
Well, we really need to understand the true shape of their anatomy before we can see how AI compresses the workflow. So, to illustrate this true anatomy, I'm actually changing our backdrop right now to a complex blueprint,
Oh, nice.
kind of like an architectural schematic, because the very first step in understanding these firms is we have to strip away their vocabulary.
What do you mean by vocabulary?
Well, the industry relies really heavily on these title dialects that just completely obscure reality.
Oh, yeah. The report highlights this perfectly with the title principle,
Yeah,
doesn't it?
exactly.
Like, that word might mean seven entirely different things depending on which firm's website you're looking at.
Right. At one firm, a principal might be a senior deal leader making crucial, board-level decisions.
And at another firm.
At another firm, it's just a compensation grade. It's just a title given to the general counsel or a senior operations manager, so they get paid a certain band.
Right. So the titles are basically local dialects. They completely hide the actual geometry of the institution.
Exactly. When you strip all those fancy titles away and you look purely at decision rights, who holds the power to sign the checks? Who holds the board seats? Who actually takes the legal fall if something goes wrong? You find that the fund is not a vertical hierarchy at all.
So it's not a pyramid.
No, it's actually three short, distinct chains that all share a single apex.
Okay, so you have the managing partner at the apex, at the top,
Right.
and then branching out horizontally beneath them, you have the investment chain, the portfolio and platform chain, and then finally the fiduciary and operating chain.
So half of what looks like the quote-unquote middle management on a standard org chart is actually lateral. It stretches sideways, not down.
That makes a lot of sense.
And this leads us to what I think is the biggest revelation in the whole dispatch, the revelation about where the mass of these institutions actually sits.
The bulk of a modern investment firm is actually not in the deal making, is it?
Nope. Not at all. It is in the operating spine.
The operating spine?
Yeah, we are talking about finance, compliance, environmental, social, and governance function, ESG reporting and administration.
The plumbing.
Exactly, the plumbing. This operating spine accounts for one-third to one-half of the total headcount at nearly every single firm in the sample.
Which completely flips the entire narrative around artificial intelligence on its head, if you think about it.
How so?
Well, when people talk about AI and finance, I think the immediate assumption is always that the machines are coming for the junior deal makers, right? The young hotshots crunching the numbers.
Right, the models and the pitch decks.
Exactly. But the actual human mass that AI will encounter when it enters these firms is the operations and compliance team. That's the real bulk of the firm.
It is. Let's look at a concrete example from the data to really picture this. The report isolates a large control private equity firm, meaning a firm of about, say, 17 to 45 people.
And we should probably clarify for you listening, the word control here is super critical because these firms take controlling stakes in the companies they buy. They have massive operational, legal, and reporting burdens compared to firms that just, passively invest in minority shares.
Right. They actually have to run the companies they buy.
Yeah, which means their operational load is just incredibly heavy.
Exactly. And in one of those control structures from the study, 10 out of the 17 people sat entirely outside the deal chain.
10 out of 17, that's the vast majority of the firm.
It is. When you strip away all the glamour of the private equity industry, the institution's center of gravity is overwhelmingly focused on operations, compliance, and basically just keeping promises to investors. The deal chain itself is surprisingly thin.
But okay, if the core of the firm is essentially just operations and compliance, then the day-to-day workflow must reorganize itself completely once AI starts taking over that actual labor.
Oh, fundamentally, yes.
Which brings up a question that I just keep circling back to while reading this.
What's that?
Well, if the bulk of the firm is just reconciling books and generating compliance reports, why not automate all of it? Like, if we have this incredible AI stack now, why not just let the machine do everything? Shrink the fund down to just two partners and call it a day.
This raises an important question, and it really gets to the absolute core insight of this entire dispatch.
Okay, let's hear it.
You cannot simply shrink a multi-million dollar fund down to two partners because of the unbreakable minimum core of an institution.
The unbreakable core.
Right. The authors call it the MVIS, the minimum viable institutional structure.
Ah, right. According to the data, even a tiny, like, four-person boutique firm actually requires a minimum of 10 accountable seats once you include the external verification shell.
Yes.
And by that shell, that means the auditors, the fund administrators, and the external legal counsel, right?
Exactly. Because an investment fund is not just a workflow engine. It's a governance system. It is a structure built entirely around trust and accountability.
Okay.
And a massive part of that structure is dictated by what the report calls the DFI floor.
The DFI floor. Development finance institutions.
Right. These are large government-backed entities that anchor many of these African funds. They provide a lot of the capital.
And that capital comes with strings attached.
Lots of strings. Strict legal covenants. They legally require dedicated human seats for ESG, for compliance, and for impact reporting.
Okay, wait. Let me push back on this a little bit.
Okay.
If an AI agent can log into the accounting software, reconcile the books in real time across multiple currencies, verify all the valuation models flawlessly, and then write a perfect 100-page ESG compliance report in, like, 5 seconds.
Right.
Why do we still need to pay a human being a massive salary to just sit in that seat? Doesn't the technology make those legal covenants completely obsolete?
It makes the workflow obsolete. It does not eliminate the fiduciary accountability.
Oh.
And that is the crucial distinction we really have to recognize here. Yes, AI can absolutely write the flawless ESG report. It can track the carbon footprint of an entire supply chain in milliseconds. But AI cannot go to jail if the report turns out to be a lie.
Ah. Okay, yeah. I get it. The machine can't take the fall.
Exactly. An AI cannot hold the legal risk. It cannot satisfy a covenant that mandates a named, liable human officer who is personally responsible for, say, the prevention of money laundering.
That makes total sense.
Furthermore, auditors require a strict segregation of duties. You must have an in-house finance owner who interfaces with an external administrator and an external auditor.
Because they have to balance each other out.
Right. You need those distinct, independent human nodes precisely because they can be held legally accountable if, you know, the people making the deals try to artificially inflate their numbers.
So the human floor isn't there because human beings are faster at typing or better at math. The human floor exists strictly to absorb the legal liability. We are literally paying people to be the shock absorbers for risk.
Yes. And this dynamic creates what the report calls the subscale manager's trap.
The trap, right.
Because these human seats are legally mandated, they carry a very high fixed cost. The report noted firms that were literally starving for capital, or they were forced to merge into larger platforms simply because their management fees couldn't cover the cost of this rigid human floor.
So the actual workload wasn't even that heavy.
No. They might only execute one deal a year, but they still had to pay for all these liability absorbers just to satisfy the auditors.
So the trap isn't a lack of deals. It's the sheer unavoidable cost of compliance.
Exactly.
Okay, so if the core of the firm is essentially just human liability, then how does a firm actually divide the work from the legal responsibility? We need to map exactly where this AI subsumption hits the firm.
Right, and the defining rule of this study's map is a fascinating correlation. There is a direct inverse relationship between workflow intensity and accountability intensity.
Okay, meaning the people doing the most routine, heavy lifting work carry the least legal responsibility.
Yeah.
And the people carrying the most legal responsibility do the least routine work.
Exactly. Think about the junior person screening 100 pitch decks on a random Tuesday. They have intense workflow, but zero accountability if one of those companies eventually goes bankrupt 5 years from now.
Right. But the senior partner signing the final audit?
They have almost zero workflow in that moment, but intense, complete accountability.
That makes so much sense.
So when AI enters the firm, the various functions sort into three very distinct buckets based on this role.
Okay, let's break these buckets down, because I think this is where the implications for anyone working in a knowledge industry, which is probably most of you listening, become incredibly clear.
Absolutely.
Bucket number one, the functions that completely disappear.
Right. These are the convenience functions, functions the firm only ever performed for its own internal benefit.
Like what?
Think about the daily friction of office life. Screening inbound deal flow to filter out the noise, drafting basic internal memos that just summarize a meeting, assembling those routine quarterly updates, coordinating endless calendar invites.
Yeah, the kind of work where nobody outside the firm actually cares how it gets done, as long as the output is there on time.
Exactly. The limited partners providing the capital do not care if a human or a machine wrote the internal meeting summary.
Right.
So those tasks just vanish into the software layer. The dedicated human seats that used to perform those tasks are completely subsumed by AI.
Gone. Okay, then you have bucket number two, the functions that survive.
These are the reliance functions. Things like exercising investment authority, building trust with the limited partners, sitting on the boards of portfolio companies, signing off on the final valuations.
Because the purpose of those functions was never the physical labor.
Exactly. The entire purpose was the accountable human being attached to the decision. So these seats remain green. They stay human.
Okay. And then there's the third bucket, which honestly I think is the most mind-bending of all of them.
The functions that become infrastructure.
Yes. Become infrastructure.
This is the information processing middle of the firm. Sourcing new companies, continuously monitoring the financial health of the portfolio, managing the firm's internal knowledge base.
So these functions don't vanish entirely, but they don't stay human either.
Right. They convert from salary to own software.
Let's just pause and unpack what that actually means for a second. If a firm used to pay a team of three people, say $150,000 a year each, to monitor portfolio data.
That was an ongoing expense on the income statement.
Exactly. Now, instead of that, they spend capital to build a proprietary AI agent to do that exact monitoring 24/7.
Right.
So that AI agent is now a proprietary asset sitting on the firm's balance sheet. The firm actually owns its own means of production.
Yeah, it starts to be valued much more like a technology company than a traditional service company.
That is just wild.
It completely rewrites the financial reality of running a business. And depending on which bucket a function falls into, the way humans and machines interact shifts dramatically.
The report maps this into four operating modes.
Right. It does. You have AI only, where the human is completely removed. You have only human, where the machine is essentially locked out of the final decision, like a committee vote.
But the middle two modes.
Ah, yes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You have AI-led and human-led modes.
Yeah.
And we need to clarify this distinction, because they sound very similar, but they are fundamentally opposites.
They are entirely different paradigms of work. In a human-led mode, the human being is still the primary producer of the value.
Like the human is sitting in a room assessing a founder's character.
Right, or negotiating a tense deal, or intervening in a management crisis. In this mode, the AI is simply an amplifier.
So it's quietly preparing the briefing document, transcribing the notes, and monitoring the data in the background. But the human does the defining work.
Exactly. But in the AI-led mode, the mechanism of workflow is completely flipped. The machine becomes the primary producer. In AI-led, the machine is the one drafting the complex 50-page diligence memo. The machine produces the vast portfolio monitoring report. The machine generates the actual work product from scratch.
And so what does the human do?
The human's job is merely to review it, correct it, and most importantly, guarantee it. The human acts as the owner of the output.
It's like the human becomes the editor-in-chief, and the AI is the entire bullpen of staff writers.
That's a great way to put it.
The editor-in-chief isn't writing every article, but if the magazine publishes something defamatory, the editor-in-chief takes the blame.
That is a perfect analogy. And to manage this entirely new paradigm, a brand new human seat has emerged within these structures, the architect operator.
Which makes me wonder about what this means for you, the listener, and the future of career skills. Does this mean the next generation of finance masters of the universe aren't going to be spreadsheet wizards who can build Excel models in their sleep?
Unlikely.
but rather they'll be software architects and prompt engineers who know how to build and secure an AI agent layer.
That is exactly what the data suggests. If the chief financial officer owns the financial books, the architect operator owns the firm's AI infrastructure.
Wow.
They build the agents, they maintain strict version control so the AI doesn't, you know, hallucinate a bad model, and they secure the data. At a tiny boutique firm, this might just be a fractional role.
But at a bigger firm?
At mid-sized and larger firms, it is a dedicated, named seat. It is the one net new job created by this entire technological shift.
The person managing the machines that replace the analyst pyramid.
Precisely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, I'll change our visual backdrop one last time to an abstract digital network overlaid onto human silhouettes.
Okay, amazing.
What this dispatch proves is that the functions we thought were the absolute core of human knowledge work, the analyzing, the drafting, the reading of massive documents, they were actually just subsumption zones.
Subsumption zones, I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, they were temporary layers that only existed because older industrial age systems required human beings to manually move information from one node to another. We only used humans because we lacked the technology to do it otherwise.
Because humans were literally the only computers available to do the work.
Exactly.
And now we aren't. Man, this is incredibly profound. Let's bring this all home. Whether you are prepping for a major strategy meeting right now, or you're just trying to figure out what the next 10 years of your own career look like, this dispatch from Audit Frontier Partners serves as a roadmap.
It really does.
It proves that we have crossed a critical threshold. Capability can now precede scale. You don't need a massive standing army to do world-class work anymore.
The future does not belong to massive legacy pyramids built on human repetition. It belongs to lean, AI-native architectures where a specialized team of 6 people can execute with the sophistication and depth of a legacy team of 60.
So what does this all mean? I want to leave you with a final thought to really mull over today.
Mm-hmm.
We've established that the defining characteristic of the human jobs that survived this transition isn't their ability to do workflow, it's their accountability.
Yeah.
But if the AI is doing all the heavy lifting, all the drafting, all the analyzing, and all the continuous monitoring, do we eventually cease to be producers of work entirely?
It is a staggering transition to consider.
Do human professionals eventually transition away from being creators and instead become professional risk absorbers?
Wow.
Are we looking at a future where we are just highly paid entities whose only real economic function is to take the legal and moral blame when the machine makes a mistake? I mean, if you look at the blueprint of the future, it might not be a skyscraper held up by a massive pyramid of junior workers.
No, it won't.
It might just be a massively intelligent machine held down by a very small, very nervous human being signing their name at the bottom. Think about that next time you look at your own organization's org chart. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.